You know, one of my favorite descriptions of the news is by Dr. Reverend Michael Beckwith, who's a pastor here in Los Angeles at the Agape International Center. He's been on our podcast before. He says the news is the lowest common denominator of the human experience. The lowest common denominator. Take everything bad that we can all agree on and put it on the news. Why is that important? Because if you're still watching the news on a regular basis, please beware. Buyer beware. The news has one objective: to tap into the lizard brain, the part of your brain, the amygdala, that is focused on fear, divisiveness. What are people doing to us? This is all sides of the spectrum. And it's designed to keep you tuning in and paying attention to the worst of humanity. Why is that important? Because today I'm presenting another big idea episode of the week: how to thrive with inner peace in this divisive and often crazy world. And the first thing is to realize, well, these big idea episodes, if you're not familiar with them, it's where I come to the audience with a thought, a distinction, or idea that's radically transformed my life for the better. And I can't think of something that's given me more inner peace than stepping away from divisiveness and conflict that comes from the clashing of belief systems. You know, in life, we're going to have different beliefs about things. We're going to have different beliefs about all sorts of stuff, even compared to our own family, maybe even compared to our own partner, our husband, wife, whoever it might be. We're going to have different beliefs in our kids. Having different perspectives and different beliefs is part of it. How stale would the world be if everybody thought the same? Even though sometimes it can feel like we wish that everybody believed the things that we did. So that's a reality. We're going to have difference of opinions. And by the way, that's okay, because guess what? It's those different opinions that help us grow. I can remember for a long time, I thought the healthiest way to be for me was to be vegan. And over a series of different experiences that I've had on this podcast, I came to the conclusion, and through conversations with friends and people that I looked up to, that that wasn't the lifestyle for me. That wasn't the diet, the method for me. And it took having conversations with people that I completely disagreed with. I was a staunch vegan. I was somebody who never thought he wouldn't be vegan. And over the course, I changed my mind. And that's part of it. There are people that you disagree with today that maybe you might adopt some of their beliefs later on because your perspective changes. So having different beliefs from other people is not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. What we don't want to do is we don't want to lose our inner peace in the process of fighting for our beliefs and letting the narrative, the news, the lowest common denominator of the human experience, we don't want it to drive our inner peace. And you know, the idea around this podcast has come from having conversations with many of you, the audience, and many friends of mine, and seeing individuals driving themselves completely into stress because of their beliefs and how their beliefs are different than others around them. And this could go on a whole host of topics. Different beliefs of how the COVID-19 virus pandemic is being handled, right? Different beliefs on vaccines, different beliefs on whether something is a conspiracy or isn't a conspiracy, different beliefs on politics, obviously being a big one right now. So I have a few thoughts and distinctions to present to you on today's podcast that have helped me maintain inner peace while also still having my belief systems that I do. So we're going to jump into them. And before we jump into them, I want to first start off with a story that I think encompasses some of the themes that are on this podcast. You know, I went to Kenya a few years ago. I was born in Kenya, Nairobi, Kenya, in 1982, basically 38 years ago. And my family left about when I was about 4 years old, 3 years old, and I hadn't been back since. So when a group of friends told me that they were organizing a trip to Kenya to go support a local tribe that had a partnership with the government to keep elephants safe from poaching, I thought, this is incredible. I love elephants. I've never spent any time with them, but they're just such majestic creatures. And anybody that's fighting to defend elephants and take care of orphaned elephants is okay in my book. So to say that I was excited about this trip was an understatement. When I got to Kenya, northern Kenya, I learned that the tribe that we were going to get a chance to spend some time with was called the Samburu tribe. They were a group of nomadic tribes people who had been living this way of life, which is every 6 to 12 months, they would set up temporary housing in different areas and take their cows and their goats and set up shop. And once they set up shop in that area, they would let their cows and goats graze until that area didn't have any more grass. Then they would move on to the next area. And this group, as climate change has been impacting their way of life, has started to look for other opportunities. And unfortunately, some of those opportunities for some individuals in that group has been poachers from overseas coming and paying them huge, huge ransoms to try to get them to poach elephants. Now, for the vast majority, this tribe's people has rejected that. But when you are in despair and you're not educated and you don't know how majestic and valuable elephants are and how Africa has lost 65% of its total wildlife population, you're willing to do anything to provide for your family. So the government and this private family partnered together and said, let's create gainful employment for these local tribespeople so that they don't have to turn to poaching or they aren't tempted for that. And we'll educate them and we'll provide schooling opportunities for their kids. It'll start small, but it'll get a chance to grow. And then we can provide employment for some of the men inside the village so that they don't get tempted to poach or go in other nefarious directions. So truly an incredible partnership. Now, when we met our guides who were explaining before we had a chance to meet the Samburu, this group of nomadic modern-day hunter-gatherers, the guide said something very interesting to us. He said, listen, there are practices and ways of life that are so beautiful that these local tribes people will follow. And you'll meet them and you'll see for yourself how caring they are, how just happy they are, even though they have very little, even though they barely have, the most advanced device they have is a cell phone. And they live in these basic huts put together with cloth and used clothing and newspapers. You'll see that they're just so happy and such incredible people. And they would give you anything that they had. And they'll sit with you and welcome you and have tea with you or anything like that. They want to spend time with you and just get to know you. They're the most welcoming people that are out there. But you'll also see that there's going to be areas of life that they practice and have practiced for many hundreds of years that you're going to completely disagree with. Areas that are barbaric by modern standards and are not okay and outlawed in the United States. And I remember listening and thinking, wow, this is probably going to be something really intense. You know, this guy's really giving us a background of how this group has very different practices than we do. And he's kind of getting us ready for something. He said, but I want to tell you, before you immediately jump into judgment, please understand this group first. Understand that this is all they know. They haven't had education. They don't know anything different. That doesn't mean that you agree with them. It means that if you actually want to support against the reversal, against some of these practices they have, you have to think bigger picture. If they don't have access to basic education, including a lot of the young children, and they don't know how to read and write, they're not going to be able to go down the path of modernizing as a group. And what's the best way to be able to do that? We can start to provide employment for them, looking after these elephants in this region and protecting them from poaching, and then start to create school for the kids. And as the kids get more educated, the tribe is going to become more modernized. And I thought, okay, that makes sense. So the next day, we met with another part of the local group, including a representative of the tribe's people. And we learned about one of these practices that our guide was talking about. And that practice is something, for those of you that are sensitive, I just want to forewarn you that we're going to be talking about something very traumatic. So just be warned. So the practice that they would practice is something that's been banned in many parts of the world and is very, very, very horrific. But just want you to hear me out as I continue on this story. and that practice is female genital mutilation. If you're not familiar with female genital mutilation, often known in short as FGM, this was a practice that still some rare groups practice, even though it's been banned in mostly all around the world. And it's a practice of basically cutting young girls. Often it's a young girl, right around the time of before puberty or right afterwards. It's cutting the clitoris. It's horrific. And I just want to say that and acknowledge it. And this is a practice, you know, there's different origins. If you want to look it up on Wikipedia about the origin, there's different information. I won't go into that here, but basically it came with certain religious traditions. And in this particular group, the Samburu tribe in Kenya, it was something that often when young women, before they went into another family, and these families here practiced polygamy. So often there was one primary patriarch of the family who had multiple wives of different ages. And a sign of status and wealth is obviously if you can provide for that family. So they practice polygamy. And in that practice, before a young girl would often become a wife, they would have this period of time where they could date and have boyfriends. But once the family said it was seriously time to get married, then in that process, they had to go through this basically terrible thing. But in their society, they saw it as a rites of passage. And the men were involved in with it just as much as the women. So it was very much baked into their culture. And what the tribesman was trying to share with us and get us ready for, and you know, there was a lot of women that were with us from America, there was a lot of men, and all people like me, people that are very progressive on women's rights around the world and would think of this as a horrific act that was there. And what he was trying to present is that, you know, this is something that you may see as very terrible. Know that it's a practice that we grew up with. And as I've had more education and more exposure to the world, I realize that it's probably not the optimal way to build in the future. But I've gone through that education. I've had different experiences that have opened my eyes up. But we can't force this on everybody else. First of all, us as Americans coming in, we have no jurisdiction over the area. And like this tribe, there's many other tribes that are in the area that have also been practicing this way of life for a long time, especially the ones that are still modern day hunter-gatherers that have very little interaction with society. He said, I want you to put aside your judgment for a second and get to know these people. And it's important to get to know these people because if you really care about them, you can think about how you can support them long-term. Going back to the original idea that our guide was sharing, that how can we help them economically in that region? Think of creative ways to create more jobs. Think of ways to bring education to the kids so that we can create an entirely different way and experience so that women don't have to go through this and aren't raised in this tradition. And I think what was really tough for a lot of the people that were with us on the trip was it's really hard to set aside your belief systems on this thing that is so horrific. And for a moment, also see these individuals who you completely disagree with in one area and see that you actually completely respect them in other areas. You respect their way of family. You respect how they take care of each other. You respect how happy their families are. You respect so many avenues of what they're trying to do. You also respect the families that are looking for new types of income and are looking to educate other tribes on how important it is to take care of the local elephant population. You know, the reason that I wanted to tell this story today, and I've shared it with a few other friends in the past, is that, you know, both things can be true. And this is called duality. And this is the first big idea that I want to present into the conversation today. And duality is this idea that there can be two truths that can be there at the same time. We can completely disagree with somebody about an item or something that they practice. For instance, there's some of you that are listening to this podcast that are staunchly pro-life, and you might vehemently disagree with somebody who's on the other side of the spectrum, pro-choice. We can have our differences in beliefs. We can fight for our beliefs. And along with it, we can see the humanity in other people and actually realize the best way to go about helping them to understand a different way of thinking. And that's often by addressing the root causes that allowed them to have the beliefs that they do, especially if we think that we disagree. Now, that doesn't mean that we're right, and I'll get to that in a second. It just means that we have a difference of opinion, and if we actually cared, we might want to think about the best way to educate people. Versus the alternative, and I see a lot of this now, is people shouting at each other and saying, "How dare you? This is unacceptable. How dare you believe what you believe? And if I shout at you long enough, maybe I'll convince you that your idea is stupid." You know, there's this John Mayer song. Yes, I'm a John Mayer fan. And the song is called Belief. And there's these set of lyrics in the first verse that I love because it so encapsulates why shouting at people on social media and telling them that they're stupid and telling them this and that is not the right approach. And the lyrics go like this. It says, "Is there anyone who ever remembers changing their mind from the paint on a sign? Is there anyone who recalls ever breaking record off for something someone yelled really loud one time? Oh yeah, everyone believes in how they think it ought to be. Oh yeah, everyone believes and they're not going easily." That's such a good set of lyrics of, did you ever remember seeing a billboard that said something that you disagree with and, you know, having ever changed your mind that way? Or somebody yelling on the street that you should believe in this or believe in that? Can you ever remember changing your mind that way? No, nobody out there, not you, not me, has ever changed their mind that way, at least on something that they really genuinely believed. And that goes into our first big idea for today's episode, and that is this. Anytime we disagree with somebody, we want to first and foremost see their humanity. I've shared this story once on the podcast before, but there was a mentor of mine, a Jain monk, J-A-I-N. It's a tradition from India, one of the oldest philosophies and ways of life in the world. Very commonly known for coining the term ahimsa and popularizing it. Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, his mentor was a Jain monk from India. But this was another mentor of mine who was a Jain monk from India that came to the U.S. to teach people about yoga and meditation. His name was Gurudev Chitrabanaji. And before you get up in arms, know that just Gurudev just means teacher, right? It's not like somebody's my guru, I'm going to listen to every single word they said. He was a teacher. He was one of my teachers. And he said, you know, when you disagree with somebody, take somebody that you vehemently disagree with, somebody that you know, right? I don't want to take somebody that you don't know. Take somebody in your own life that you disagree with, that you know. Could even be somebody in your own family. And if you could watch a movie of their life from the time that they were born all the way up to today, but you could watch it on fast forward, but see every detail, every conversation they've had, every book they've read, influences, tragedies they've gone through, highs, lows, one thing would be certain. Even if you disagreed with them, even if you still disagreed with their way of life and how they believe about stuff, you would still understand them. See, you don't have to believe the same thing that somebody believes to understand them. This is called empathy. Putting ourselves in their shoes and understanding that if we went through everything that they went through from the time that they were born, we might end up thinking the same way that they thought about something, even something that we never thought that we would believe in. Our life situations have such an impact on how we develop as a human being. And in this day and age, what you see, especially in politics, is that anytime you start to disagree with somebody, the first thing you do is dehumanize them. When you really disagree and you want to belittle them and you want to shout at them and prove them wrong, one of the things that people do is they dehumanize the other side. And as soon as you dehumanize somebody, you take somebody's humanity away, it's easier to write them off. It's easier to just write them off as crazy and somebody that should be removed from society or should move to another country. And that doesn't get us anywhere. Because here's the other big idea that I want to present. Big idea number two. Most people are good people. Genuinely. Most people on earth are good people, good citizens that want to provide for their family, take care, be a better person, leave the earth better off than they found it. And we have to remember that. Now, does that mean that there's not bad actors that are out there? Does that mean that there's not quote unquote leaders that are hijacking the narrative and are trying to get people to dehumanize one side or another? Does that mean that there's not people that legitimately are running what some people see as a conspiracy, but is actually a coercive attempt to suppress the truth? We know that these things are true. We know that there's bad actors. We know that there's some people that have so lost their own sense of what's right and wrong that they think the ends justify the means. But that's not most people. Most people are good people. That includes people you disagree with. So big idea number two is never take away somebody's humanity. We can completely disagree with them, but also understand at the end of the day that they are a human being. If we could see everything in their life that's happened up until today, we may still disagree with them, but we would understand them. All right, big idea number three. This is a quote, a tweet that I want to read to you from the writer Neil Strauss. Really cool guy. If you don't know him, check him out. By the way, a little caveat on that. Check out his more recent books. He's known as somebody who wrote the definitive guide on basically pickup artistry. I never read that book, but I found out later on. So he wrote a book that he kind of now, you know, regrets, but was where he was. And so don't read that book. Read more his more recent books that are actually really beautiful, authentic truths about building real relationships and letting go of past traumas. So Neil Strauss, he has this great tweet that he shared the other day. He said, "Those who are never wrong are rarely right." Those who are never wrong are rarely right. If you think you know everything, you are probably wrong about so much in your life. I know this. There's some things I know, and there's other things that I don't know, or there's things that I think I know that I probably will prove wrong at some point in time, and I welcome it. And it doesn't mean that I don't have strong ideas and opinions. You know, Steve Jobs always had this great quote. He said, "Have strong opinions loosely held." Strong opinions. This is how you view something. And loosely held, you're open to changing your mind if somebody comes in with a better perspective or education on a topic. Be open to learning, especially be open to having intellectual dialogue with people that you disagree with. I've grown so much in my life from having friends that have different beliefs about topics who come in and take the time to educate me. Now, I'm not going to get into a shouting match, especially on social media. I'm not going to get into personal attacks and hear somebody belittle me because I have a different of opinion or call me names or other things like that, which I've gone through before. I'm sure some of you have gone through as well. But I don't shy away from having an intellectual debate in a beautiful way with somebody who has difference of opinions than I do. In fact, I often leave with another perspective. Even if I still have the same belief, I'm like, well, you know what? That's also true. This goes back to duality. This goes back to duality. Duality is that two ideas can exist at the same time. Yes, this can be true, but this also can be true too, and they're both exactly true. Yes, do most people who authentically study criminal reform agree that there's a problem with our criminal justice system? Yes, especially in the category of nonviolent drug offenders. And do people on both sides of the aisle agree that there needs to be some reform there so that police don't have to go after these offenders? Absolutely. And there's actually been some really incredible progress that's out there and some significant work that's actually come from the Koch brothers, individuals who are traditionally seen as being on the right side of politics are doing some interesting work in addition to some people on the left side. And along with that, do the vast majority of Americans feel that we need to defund the police? No. Most Americans and local groups and populations actually have a positive relationship with the police. And even the ones that have a positive relationship with the police, do they also feel that some reforms need to happen so that police don't have to go after nonviolent drug offenders in other areas? Yes. So it's very rarely that one truth clearly summarizes a complicated issue. And in fact, if there's a very complicated issue that has a super simplistic answer, that's often the answer of somebody who's not fully thought it through. This is why we need to be open to ideas that are not our own. Going back to the Neil Strauss quote, those who are never wrong are rarely right. What does this have to do with inner peace? Here's what it has to do with inner peace. Anytime I meet somebody that has a different opinion than me, I don't go in looking to prove my point right. If there's somebody who's a good human being, if they're willing to have a good conversation, I'm there to listen. And where I disagree with them, I can get that in too. But you see that people become so defensive. Where does stress come from? Where does all this stress come from people who have different opinions? It comes from immediately feeling that you have to prove the other side wrong or you're invalidated. Can you imagine what kind of stress that puts people under? The feeling of, I need everybody to believe the same thing as me, and if they don't, then my beliefs in humanity and who I am is invalidated. That's no way to live. That's why, you know, Byron Katie, she has this great quote. She says, defense is the first act of war. When you come into a conversation defensive, ready to butt heads with somebody, that's immediately an act of war and not a sign of good dialogue. Rick Hansen, Professor Rick Hansen, who was on this podcast talking previously about the work of his work on negativity bias, he says, you know, whenever I see this vitriol online, people arguing about beliefs or coming at me and not willing to have an honest conversation, I disengage. It's not worth it because I know I'm not going to change their mind through just aggressive tweets back to their viewpoints on my side. Now, people want to have an honest dialogue, I'm open to it. But if they don't, I disengage. Disengaging doesn't mean you don't care. It just means you're not going to get in a ball of stress to convince somebody who you don't even hardly fucking know. Don't waste your energy on people that are not willing to have an open dialogue, which also means you should be willing to have an open dialogue. When you go in, then you save a lot of time. You only spend time on people who are worth it. All right, this goes into our next big idea, which is a quote from the incredible Wayne Dyer. Rest in peace, Wayne Dyer. Any of you that grew up watching PBS or public TV have probably seen one of Wayne Dyer's specials that have been on there. I know I grew up with it or read some of his incredible books. Wayne Dyer has a really fantastic quote, and I'm gonna read it to you. Become a person who refuses to be offended by anyone, anything, or any set of circumstances. If something takes place and you disapprove, by all means, state what you feel from your heart, and if possible, work to eliminate it. Not being offended is a way of saying, I have control over how I'm going to feel, and I choose to feel peaceful regardless of what I observe going on. Right now, I know someone out there is going to be offended about my post about not getting offended, but here we go. Every time you're easily offended, right? That's really the category that I'm talking about. Sometimes you see something that is just true injustice in the world, and it's something that goes against what you feel that's there. And it's something that, okay, yeah, you do feel offended about it. I agree that there are things that are out there like that, but I'm talking about easily offended. So every time you're easily offended, you give up control to someone else. You let your judgments of their views or beliefs dictate your reaction, which is more likely going to distract you from your mission. You don't have to be offended to work to eliminate something. And how do you not be offended? You're only offended if you don't have empathy for where that person comes from. And the fact that, yeah, they believe this because of all the things that they've gone through, that doesn't make it right. I don't believe in it, but I'm not going to waste my time getting my panties in a bunch, so to speak, and getting all stressed out and getting offended by what's going on. I'm going to maintain my own inner peace and work hard to fight against whatever injustice I see in the world. When more of our attention goes towards that than fucking stressing out about shit that doesn't matter, and I'm not saying it doesn't matter, I'm just saying that we stress out about things that our reaction to it is fighting with somebody online or disagreeing with somebody at the table vehemently and butting heads instead of having a really good conversation and sharing viewpoints and sides and finding mutual understanding, or even agreeing to disagree and saying, look, you believe in this and I believe in this, but I still see you as a human being and we could still be friends. So let's not waste our time getting stressed out or letting other people stress us out. Let's spend all our attention on getting results and taking action. Getting results and taking action towards the thing that we feel we want to change in the world. And that doesn't have to mean, and this is our last big idea for today's episode, it doesn't have to mean we cancel our friends. You know, there's been a lot of jokes about cancel culture. If you're not familiar with it, just Google it. But that's the idea. If somebody says something that you don't agree with, that you as a group or society, especially online, have chosen to cancel them, remove them. Now, I'm not going to chime in about online and canceling public figures. I'm actually going to talk about canceling friends because we see a lot of this happening. Now, if you're not actually friends with somebody and you're just Facebook friends with them or social media friends with them, and they keep on posting about things that are maybe upsetting you or causing you to react, okay, fine. I can understand that. Maybe you mute them. Maybe you decide to unfollow them. But where I really feel a great loss in the world is when two people, two well-meaning, beautiful people, remember, most of humanity is good. Most of humanity wants to make a positive difference on the earth. When you have two people that are in that category, that are good, genuine human beings, that have vastly different viewpoints, they're on completely different sides of the aisle politically, or on modern topics, or whatever it might be, or approaches to health, they're on two different completely viewpoints. And especially online, without a civil conversation, one person links to something that the other person feels like, how dare you link to that? That's a conspiracy theory. Or another person links to something and says, how dare you link to that? That's appalling that you would ever talk about that. And they decide to cancel each other. They decide to use that as evidence to not be friends. The crazy thing is, if you actually knew what your closest friends believed in all sorts of categories, and I'm not just talking politically, I'm talking about when it comes to health, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to a lot of different things, you would find that there's big categories that you have difference of opinions than they do. So are you going to use every single one of those categories as reasons not to be friends with them? You know, we need, besides the fact that we need other people with different viewpoints to make us better human beings, sometimes people with other viewpoints are actually fun to be around. They see the world in a different place. Sometimes, often, they make us a better person. They give us a different perspective on things. And by the way, just because somebody believes something completely different than you doesn't mean that they can't contribute to your life. There's people that I'm in friends with in the world of business, because that's the world that I come from, that have helped me make a lot more money in my business and serve more people or start a podcast or do this, but I have different political views than them. Am I going to use it as a reason not to be friends with them? Now, this is up to you individually. You have to decide that. But I've decided that my life is better when I have more diverse people in it from different backgrounds and different viewpoints, as long as fundamentally we can talk to each other and exist as human beings. Don't be so petty with your beliefs that you cancel somebody in your life who at one point in time was a positive contribution. You might even decide that we choose not to engage. You know, I have friends, I used to be vegan, so I have all these vegan friends and people that I grew up with in my religious tradition of the Hindu and Jain community. Even though I don't identify by those traditions right now, I take from them, but I don't call myself a Hindu or a Jain. I have people from those traditions where basically it was expected that you would be vegetarian. Part of being Hindu or Jain growing up, at least in the tradition that I was that you were expected to be vegetarian. And once I was no longer vegetarian, there was people that vehemently, we used to be close friends, and they no longer saw me as a close friend because I had a different practice or way of life, and they felt that I was being cruel to animals and how could I, and I was a hypocrite and what did I stand for? And I have to have empathy and understand that I used to look at things that way too. I once was looking at the situation just like them. So first of all, have empathy. Secondly, over the years, as we reconnected, we just learned to have a positive friendship and contribute where we can, check in on each other, care for each other's goodwill, you know, have close relationships with each other's family because we genuinely enjoy each other. And you know what? We don't get into the whole vegan, non-vegan debate. We don't talk about nutrition. And that's off the table for us. And our friendship is better for it. Now, maybe that's not your truth. You got to find your truth. But I'll tell you, if you only have friends that see the world the way you do, I feel sorry for you. Just being honest. If you only have friends that see the world exactly the way you do, you're missing out on the richness and growth that comes from human beings that come from all different categories of life. As long as fundamentally they're a good human being and you interact with them as a good human being and they interact with you as a good human being. The media, the world wants us to think that this is a crazy and divisive place. It only is that way if we play into it. Decouple from the regular news that's out there. Regardless of what news it is, decouple from it. Read slow news. Listen to slow news. News that isn't based on the 24-hour cycle of the latest craziest shit that the president tweeted and that the other side responded to. I don't engage in all that. That doesn't mean that I don't vote. It doesn't mean that I don't care what's happening with the next election. It doesn't mean that I'm not informed. I'm just not going to let the lowest common denominator of humanity get me up in arms. And as grounded as I think I am, as soon as I start watching a little bit of TV or I'm at the airport, I'm traveling, or I'm at some friend's house and the TV's on in the background, I can immediately see my fear response inside getting all worked up. That's no place to be. We're not a positive contribution to ourselves and the rest of the world when we're in that place. We're just more divisive with each other. So let's decouple from the news media that's the 24-hour cycle. Listen to slow news. Listen to great thinkers, people that are willing to address the complicated topics and look at all the layers and understand the nuances that truths are complicated. And there's various aspects of them. We can still believe what we believe, but let's acknowledge those various aspects that are there. Step into freedom, unplug from the divisiveness, the craziness. You can do it. Your entire life will be better because of it. This is Drew Prode here, signing off from this week's Big Idea Tuesday episode. If you liked it, if you hated it, even if you disagree with me, I want to hear from you. Text me, 302-200-5643. 302-200-5643. I use a service called Community to use an actual phone number to text with my audience. And every day I spend a couple hours on it responding to people, saying hi, and checking in on them and hearing about their little corner of the world. If you would be so kind and share your opinion about today's podcast or just what you care about or what you're thinking about or what you're reading these days, I would love to hear about it. And occasionally, every so often, I tweet out a quote or something that I'm reading or listening to or an idea that is bringing me value to the audience. So 302-200-5643. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. I'll catch you next week.